I went over and beginning the visit with, I'm setting it up now for Ennis and Anime Cox this Saturday, the 30th of March, 74. I'm setting it up for Ennis and Anime Cox this Saturday for lunch, the 30th of March, 74. Channel one over, and I'm setting it up for Ennis and Anime Cox this Saturday, the 30th of March, 74.
Thank you.
Hey, your water's on.
Yeah, I know. Why, yes. How did you get down on the table that fast? Lunch.
I'll tell you. Just make my water. I'm trying to keep my weight down.
See, he's got to lift himself when he has his walk from Christmas to 2 months. He doesn't want to have to lift.
How about this, guys? How about that? That's fine.
And I'll push you right here. And this is easier. And you sit right here.
Thank you.
I thought maybe that would be
well. And this look good.
Now, you watch television a little bit, don't you?
Yes,
oh,
I do.
Oh, does he ever?
Well, you watch the same channel all the time?
No. We're on a cable there, and I watch anything coming and going.
Oh, I see.
Not quite. He is a little selective, but not much.
Father, we're thankful for this day and for this occasion and for the fellowship with friends, for the hospitality of this home. We ask our blessings upon all of us and upon all of our dear ones in Jesus' name. Amen.
Annabelle, is there
a
little something I could get for you? Like a little banana?
I just happened to do, but.
Hey, this looks
good.
This looks first rate.
So don't worry about it. She didn't put the opener here by my fresh.
Yes, right.
Did you ever sit and look out the window and where there was an automobile out there and the chrome was catching the light and blinding you?
Yes.
Yes, that's not much fun.
That's why he has that light there.
We could have a little more light.
Well,
I think it's enough.
We don't mind.
No.
You get it open.
Okay.
Well,
I just put some
I ought have offered somebody part of my flesh. Yeah,
I
got it all poured out.
What I found was I sit up the old time and I look out those windows.
Yes.
And it blinds me.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that we're fussy about, Ernest, is our eyes.
Yeah.
Well, both of you have reason to be.
Yeah.
The problems you
I have very sensitive eyes, and a little too much light makes trouble for me.
Me too.
What was he telling you about the cedar wax wings?
Yes, uh-huh. The guy was talking about how they had come out here in the droves.
We
have
both had skies on.
Oh, they were so pretty. I
There's
didn't even begrudge in my yellow.
A little kind of
little
fruit.
Yellow fruit that
yellow
grows on our street.
Fruit that
the
grows
tree
on these trees. It looks somewhat like magnolia trees, but are not. They've got leaves a little like
it's
magnolia trees.
It's a Chinese tree kind of tree, and I can't remember what it was.
And they're sweet.
What
a little sweet.
And people eat
a little
them.
Larger than marbles, about the size of golf balls. And
oh,
the
really?
Birds just go for them.
Oh, do they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it might be something that you could plant.
Oh, listen,
you
I've
don't
got
have to plant them; they'll grow all over the
listen,
place.
Listen,
well,
I've got some growing up Problem. Around home that you might like out here. They're pretty plants, and you're welcome to. Mm-hmm. There's several already around the place now.
Anybody, you know, I think I've got an idea now. I might go visiting a little more if I could take my food with me.
Well, I was thinking, this is wonderful. We'll just add down
well,
there.
Faye was she's the one that's the bright one. We've been invited several places since I had this little problem, and I had to turn it down, and I hated it so because we love to be with people that we know and love. And so Faye just solved the problem. I said, she's right, don't you just bring one, Kathy?
Just
like that.
Makes it simple
like
all around, doesn't it, Ernie?
It's all right.
I always used to.
Now, is that at your place where you saw those cedar wax rings?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Our place, our neighbor's place.
God,
both
you
have several of these trees.
Sit on the back porch with us sometime because we see lots of birds out there.
Yeah.
We are not as citified it as you would think on, I mean, our property and everything, because 22nd Street is so fast that people think, but we've got that screened in Port Florida room there that makes us protected from it.
Well,
and I've got so I can sleep. I took a nap yesterday afternoon and Ernie said that the fire, the
ambulance came by just blowing,
screaming on 22nd Street. My head was right at 23rd Street. I didn't wake up.
Didn't disturb her at all. She didn't know it had gone by.
So we used to that when we sleep, but
my thought
the
was the poor girl won't get her nap now because that fool waked her up.
Yeah. Well,
now. You know, I have found I can sleep through a television. It depends on who's playing it.
I imagine you slept through some pretty good actors in your day, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even when I wasn't in here, you see, it depends partly on who's got it on.
Whether it bothers you or not, in that instance.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
What kind are these sets? What are they makes?
Let me tell you, they don't have a name. They just sort of throw together.
Well, what surprises me is that I see two televisions, but it's like...
Well, I got one for... I don't get but two channels out here, you see, so I got one for each channel.
Oh, God!
That's right!
Well, that spares you a lot of things you don't want to see. It doesn't mean that you see...
sense of humor.
It doesn't mean that you see more. It may be that you see less. You see that there's some things you can just cut off or you don't want to see them.
Oh, God.
You know that? It used to be, for a long time, I didn't care for the Arabs.
The Arabs.
So I'd take another talent. But it's got to the point now where the Arabs, they're the head men.
They're in now.
They're really in.
I don't know why all this conversation reminds me of one of Ernie's jokes. I think he must tell you that. The old Jeff Gowdy's philosophy.
When we went to live in Mississippi, we went from Texas to Mississippi. And the fellow who was a town barber looked like one of the college professors. You'd think you saw him come down the aisle in church that this is either a congressman or or a senator or on the staff of the college, maybe one of the executive officers of college. But he was a barber, and he charged 25 cents for a haircut. This sounds as if the economy was a little depressed in that area. That's the going rate. And he was very leisurely about it. He didn't get in a hurry. He'd take all afternoon if there's no other customers. He just liked to talk, you know, carry on a conversation, whittle away at your hair. Well, he said one day, you know, if you'll observe people as long and as carefully as I have, you'll notice that there's just as much difference in one man as there is in another. What do you think about that?
He comes around and slaps you. I haven't got it figured out yet.
Think about that. Just as much difference in one man as there is in another. Well, it sounds as if he's made a profound remark, you know, but it's utter foolishness.
Well, this, I don't know why a guy's comment about the TV is reminding me of that
particular joke. I forgot about that. I wouldn't want to compete with him.
I have to tell you another one about him.
Oh, he's got him started now.
Oh, that's good.
No, just one more.
Yeah, I don't know him, you see. Annabelle just discarded her. I mean, she talked to me.
His name was Jess Gowdy. And he had a shine boy who was a mulatto boy. And one day he jumped me to get a shoe shine while Mr. Gowdy was still working on my hair. He said, "Don't you want to shine?" I said, "Well, I do need a shine, but," I said, "Uncle Jess here has taken such a generous amount of time getting my hair cut that I'm not sure I have time for it." I said, "My wife will be looking for me for supper up there any minute." I said, "How long will it take you?" He said, "Just a minute or two." He said, "Uncle Jess and I are gated differently."
That man.
Yeah.
I'm gated.
Now you wouldn't run across Uncle Jess anymore, would you?
He's been dead a long time now.
Well, that's the trouble with all these fellas.
Yeah.
He's the one you might want to hear talk a little bit.
Yeah.
He just don't last, do they?
That's right.
Interesting fellow. I'm telling you, that little town had more characters in it. He just enjoyed old man, the blacksmith, for him.
Uh-huh.
Was so, and still had blacksmith shop.
Oh.
And he, Mary Margaret, always loved to go by and say hello to
Stanford. Stanford,
yeah.
Elmore Stanford.
He was one of her friends. I was so glad she had the opportunity to know such a wide variety of people when she was little.
Uh-huh.
You see, out here, you're protected by the neighborhood you're in,
uh-huh,
to more or less the same kind of people. But anyway.
Well, does he know anything about him?
Yeah, Stanford.
The blacksmith?
He knows a story on him. It's a pretty bad.
Come on.
Yeah.
Don't matter.
Oh, me.
Well, Annabelle, you can tell this one.
Well, the business manager at the Lord College, say he's the kindest man in the world. So when Mr. Stanford, the blacksmith, who was his second or third wife, died. Anyway, he had lost one or two of his wives, and she was to be buried in a town about 25, 30 miles away, and Mr. Buchanan, our business manager, offered to take to drive Mr. Jess over and so on.
Not Jess.
No, I keep getting mixed up with Mr. Jess, Mr. Stanford over.
Stanford.
Yeah. So on the way over, Mr. Buchanan was trying to be sympathetic with Mr. Stanford, and he said, "This surely is bad, Mr. Stanford, and I'm so sorry about it." And he spoke up and he said, "Well, you know, it could be worse." He said, "That could be me lying over there not talking." Now, what do you know about that?
Is that right?
No.
Is that right?
That really happened.
The business manager came back with that story from the film.
Well, when we went back to visit the new dean's wife, had tea for us, and we were sitting around and we were talking about. I was talking about how we loved living there, and I said, "Well, one thing is, it's such interesting people." I said, "I don't think I ever saw as many characters in one town." And the dean's wife turned to me and she said, "From what I hear, Mrs. Cox, you were one of them." Now, how do you feel when somebody tells you you're a character?
You don't mean it.
You did as I'm saying.
Well, how'd you figure that out?
I don't know. Why she thought I was a character.
Just what she had heard, I guess.
Why did you think she'd heard? I never thought of that about a character.
Oh, me. Well, I was uninhibited. I said what I thought, and maybe that's why she did. I have never had an image to maintain.
What you
say? It doesn't bother me. Maybe that's what was the trouble. I couldn't be the dean's wife the way I ought to or something, because I couldn't maintain an image.
I've got a couple more vignettes about that place, if you ought to hear.
Yeah.
Old man Adair.
Oh, I know what that one is.
Old man Adair reached the age of 70, and he announced it this way. He said, "I was 70 years old yesterday, and I've never been in jail a day in my life."
He was so
proud
of that.
This was an accomplishment for him, you know. But he's the one I overheard say in a store one day, as I was in a general merchandise store there, and it was a cold day, and the people were back around the stove and back in the store, and I'd made a purchase and was coming out. This old man was following along after me, and he had heard some of the conversation back here. It was in the late months of the World War II. He had heard some conversation over whether it was really true that Hitler had been killed. He was shaking his head as he came out. He said, "There are two things you can't never hear anymore, the truth and meat of frying."
Couldn't get meat because of the rationing.
He tied it up with the rationing, you know. The truth and meat are frying. You can't hear those anymore. He's also guilty of this next one.
Stop him if you need to, guy.
No, I don't.
His son George was a wayward kind of a fellow. I said, fellow, he was in his 30s, I guess. George's wife had been sick, was just getting over an illness. And the old man was in her bedroom visiting her a little bit and looked out through the window and saw George coming toward the house. Oh, he said, here comes George. And as George came toward him, he said, you know, I believe George is bothered. And as George's walk came unmistakably wavering, you know, and tottery, he said, yes, yes, George is bothered.
Did you
now
ever?
You can match these stories, I know.
No, I can't either.
Well, you can. Tell us something.
Let me tell you, you don't ever remember hearing about whiskey being a problem or all those things. It was it talked about it just like you did then.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a source of
that's some of the loveliest understatement I ever heard. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Bothered.
Yeah.
I was coming out of that same store one day, and people were talking about the possibility that we would have peace soon, still during the later months of the war. I heard a woman say devoutly, I sure do hope the war doesn't last for the duration.
Well, now let me tell you, Ernest, let me get mine. I've got some old breakfast coffee that I
drink. He's the only fellow, only person in the world I know who loves to drink cold coffee all throughout the day.
Like Emerson said, you see, in that business about the blacksmith, he says they don't, I can't give you the wording, don't you know, they don't harass themselves by looking for words. The language just comes to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, that's why it's so interesting.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and you know, I wish that I had an opportunity ever since I became aware of that, where I could, you know, just keep that in mind and talk to some of these people like you were saying. Now, I don't know whether these are the people that he had in mind or not. Of course, people differ. The ones in the country differ from the ones in the little towns and all like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no hardly anything in common with the people who live down here at McIntosh and the ones who live out there in the shallow community. They just, there's different people who eat with a fork and eat with the ones who eat with a knife. Just different reality. But see, I've never had access to them. Isn't that amazing? I've always wanted to, but I haven't quite had any feedback.
Tell you about another man out there. He was the headmaster of a boys' preparatory school, which was established along the lines of the Webb School at Bellbuckle,
mm-hmm.
about
oh
which
yeah.
you'll know
oh
something.
Yeah. Now, you had some salty fellas doing things like that, didn't you?
This old fellow, old Prof Brown, knew about that school, and he I guess he knew Webb, Sonny Webb.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a school, which in the later days of it was almost reformatory. I don't know whether I can eat another one or not.
You have a half one.
Well,
I'll split one with you.
Yeah.
Why don't
I? No, y'all have one. You have one.
Well, thank you.
I bet they're good.
They're very good. This old fellow.
Well, they taste better away from home.
It tastes good anywhere. In the later days of the school, it was a good deal like a reformatory because he was so well known for his discipline that people from all over that area who had boys who were a little unruly would send them to him.
Mm-hmm.
We had state senators and United States senators and congressmen and judges. And for a while, the municipal court in Memphis would parole boys out to his school, you know. And he had a terrific reputation for discipline.
Let me tell you, I never heard of any situation like that.
I didn't either.
The school was discontinued upon his death. We were there at the time he passed away. He was one more character. I heard him teach Sunday school class there regularly. He was a man who had been man who had classical training. He read Latin and Greek, you know, and he taught Latin and Greek there in his school. And the story is that one day a fellow from downstate brought his son up there and knocked on the house, the residence of Prof. Brown. Mrs. Brown met him at the door. He said, "I'm looking for Professor Brown." She said, "He's over at the school doing some work on the school. You'll find him over there." And the school was 100 yards away, a big brick building, just one building, kind of old-fashioned building. And so the man with his boy in tow went over to find Prof. Brown. And Prof, this was summertime, he was barefooted in his overalls, had a hammer. He was nailing things up around there, fixing things to rights. This was in the summer vacation. So this man said, "I'm looking for Professor Brown." "Well," I said, "you, I guess you found it." And man said, he was taken aback a little bit, you know, and he said, "What I wanted to talk to you about was my boy." He said, "He's been in two or three schools. I'll just tell you the truth about him. He's been in two or three schools already, and he couldn't get along with people. And I've had to make other arrangements for him." And he said, "I just wondered if I could talk you into taking him." Prof. Brown looked at this boy and said, "Is this the boy?" "Yes." Prof. reached up and bent the boy over and reached up and got a barrel stave and just tore him up.
"That's awful."
And said,
"That's
as he let the boy resume his upright position, said, "We'll get along fine, won't we?" The boy said, "Yes." And they did.
That's horrible.
I can't. He reached up,
and
got a barrel stave.
Got up and got the boy by the neck and bent him over and got a barrel stave. Paddle.
And just paddled him.
And paddled him.
Well, that barrel stave would pretty well fit, wouldn't it? It worked.
That's bad. I don't like that story. I don't like it a bit.
One night he invited me to drive his car.
That's part of why I didn't okay you, Prof. Brown.
One night, Prof invited us to go to a meeting over in Ripley, the county seat town, with him and his wife.
Wow.
He had a big Buick, big heavy Buick car. And he said to me, "You drive a car?" I said, "Of course. I got my own. Drive it." "You drive a Buick?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You drive." So we started off, and I'm pretty prompt about the way I start off usually. And
say that again.
It just took off, and he said, "Whoa!" He said, "This thing will run right out from under you." So I had to slow it down.
I never rode with her in it, but I've
you've heard about him, no doubt.
I have the report has reached me.
Yes, I'm sure the report has reached me.
What does 55 mile an hour do to you, Ernie?
Nothing.
Clara, when Clara brought friends.
I just observe it.
When Clara brought friends home from Stetson, and they met Ernest with his white hair, and he came in and, you know, spoke to them so nicely and everything. Clara said when they got in the car with Ernest, they were simply bug-eyed. They just had no idea.
He was such a sport.
He would drive the way he did.
Oh. Well, there's no use just dawdling, is there? If you're going anywhere.
That's right. I got into this habit when I was a small boy. My father would send me downtown to the post office to get the mail or to mail a letter. And he'd say to me, and he was pretty strict disciplinarian, he'd say, don't stop anywhere. He said, you go straight there and get what you're after and come straight back. He knew that I might stop along and play marbles with the boys, you know, getting a row or something. And so I got in the habit of being just making a straight line for the post office, straight line back.
Oh, you had training in it.
I did have excellent training. This used to work.
Oh, you expected your wife to be that way. She's not about to.
This used to work.
Used to. You don't
when I go to and from school, he explained the same thing to me about going to school now. He said, don't dawdle along the way to play with the boys. You come on home. He said, there's too much trouble when people fool around. So one day I was in the middle of a marble game on the way back home from school. And I looked way off in the distance and I saw my dad coming in this general direction. And I thought, well, I better break this up. So I explained to the boys that I was in a little difficulty. And I got behind a bush. Oh yeah, I withdrew from the game, got behind a bush. My father walked up the bush and stood over it and said, come on out.
You mean he could see that way?
Oh, he worked me over. That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Your father was a Methodist minister.
Baptist.
It's worse than that. He's a Baptist man.
Well, let me tell you. I have tried several times to tell Faye that story that you told me up there at your office one time about Roscoe going fishing and using your daddy's car. And I never do get it straight. I've tried it several times.
Well,
you see, they fished, Faye.
They fishing along to that Roscoe.
I invited Roscoe up to Elizabethton, where I was school superintendent, to fish with me. We were going across the mountain over in North Carolina, fish in Lake James near Marion, North Carolina. We made that trip two to three different times, but this time in particular. Roscoe drove up from Knoxville to Elizabethton in his car. If I remember correctly, it was an Essex. I'm not sure. Old at that time. My father had a brand new Dodge car.
Oh, it was Dodge.
He had a brand new Dodge car. And he said, as he looked at that car and thought about our getting across the mountains, he said to me, wouldn't you like to borrow my car? If you want to borrow my car, make this trip in, and if Dr. Parker's willing for me to use his around town here, I think it might work out a little better. And I thanked him, and I mentioned it to Parker.
Did he laugh?
No, he said, fine. He said, we'll do that. So we went in my dad's car, and we stayed two or three days and caught a few fish and had a good time and came back. And one of the first things that Roscoe wanted to know from my father was, how did you get along with my car? My father said, well, just fine. He said, just fine. He said, I believe it's the most patient car I ever drove. And Roscoe just spoke up over
there. That's right. That's right. Your daddy had a feel for cars, kind of like you have.
Father Cox.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So Somewhat.
He get in it, and the car would have to have it.
Have to have some pickup.
It's taken right off.
Well, they came from the mountain territory over there. They have to have some pickup over there where they were, so they don't get over the hill.
You know, I'll tell you a story about my dad. Annabelle, let me see. I'm
afraid we're not.
Oh, you got plenty.
We're gonna miss out on some of Guy's stories if we don't wait. I want to get some of his.
Well,
you go ahead.
I've got one.
I
wrote it out, and I'll give it to you. Let's take it home with you.
How about that? Oh, I'd love to hear you tell it.
Several, I don't tell it as well, but I can write them.
Several years ago here at the university, when I was in the lower division, University College, I asked Coach Graves, I guess it was, to let me register the freshmen who came from Tennessee, football freshmen. And there were several of them. Steve Spurrier was one of them.
Oh, yes.
And there was a boy from Elizabethton, Poland was his name. And so these boys came in, and I registered them and talked to them, and I was especially interested in this boy from Elizabethton. I said, how long have you lived there? Grew up there, he said, all my life. Well, I said, that name's not familiar to me, and I used to live there. So I met his parents at reception, Mr. and Mrs. Poland, and I said to them, I'm interested in this. I used to live at Elizabethton. Fact is, I was the superintendent of city schools there for a couple of years, a good while ago. I said, how long have you lived there? Well, lady said, I've lived there all my life, and I don't remember you. Well, I said, that just shows how long ago it's been.
I'm just 22.
I said,
oh, really?
I said, I was there, and Mr. Main was the man who preceded me, W.K. Main, and L.J. Harrod was the man who succeeded me. Well, they said, we don't remember them either. Those names are not familiar to us. I said, that's kind of strange. I said to the woman, what was your maiden name? And the maiden name was Gormley. Oh, I said, I knew Mrs. Gormley, who was out at the West Side. She was president of the Parent Teacher Association at our West Side school. She said, that was my mother. She was very active in parent teacher work. Now, I said my father was a pastor of one of the Baptist churches there. Oh, Preacher Cox? I said, yes. Oh, yes, know him. I heard him preach a lot. He was my pastor for a while. I said, well, that's interesting. It's interesting if you remember him and don't remember me. But I said, I've been gone a long time from that area. And she began to tell me things about my dad, some of which I'd never heard. I didn't know. She said, he was awfully quick on the uptake. She said, one day, she said, you know, the young people liked him. And said they'd tease him and he'd tease them back. And one day, as they went out of church, some of my friends, some teenage girls said to him, Preacher, I must tell you the truth. We didn't get a thing out of that sermon today. He said, I'm not surprised you didn't bring anything to put it in.
Y'all just keep right on.
So they expected that.
Yeah, of course. Well, this was awfully good.
Well, I'm going to give you a little dessert now. Just keep right on. Thank you,
well...
Well, Guy, I thought you had, somebody told me you were collecting some stories or the speaking, singing or something.
Is that right?
Native, the people around.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about it. You've left loaded with stuff.
Well, let me tell you, I'm not much at telling. But I can, I've got one in there. I'll let you take it home.
Well, fine. I'll say I'd love to read it.
And,
I'll return it by Faye sometime.
Now, this is Zane's, this is a story of Zane's Bremer Bull.
Mm-hmm.
Bremer Bull belonged to the neighbor named Zane. And, it's, the thing about it is, now it's true, and, you see, I don't circulate these stories much, you see, because they're about the people I know.
Yes.
Yes, I understand.
And if the word gets out that I'm circulating stories on them, you see, they'll quit telling me.
That's right.
Sure.
That's right.
And they are not actually stories.
Yes,
they
of course.
They just, well, what you're telling not stories either.
Mm.
But they tell me what happened. And the thing about it is, one of the curious parts about this is that it's so sustained.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ordinarily, they'd tell you this Bremer Bull jumped over the fence and came over there and took a little slurp out of my protein barrel and then go back, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But this just goes on and on and on.
That is good.
I mean if I can find it, if I don't find it, my filing system is not the best.
Well, you can send it to me by Faith sometime, because
oh,
I'd love to read it.
Yes. And if I could get them over here, you see, when people are not afraid of it, you see, I stick this.
Let them talk.
Yes, I put this up here, covered up, always covered up, because
uh-huh.
You don't want to just sit there and
mm-hmm.
let this damn thing stare you in the face and put it on over here. You see, all I got on was this.
Well, how about that? Uh-huh.
I taste it.
Are you on? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner.
I heard this on TV last night.
Yeah, you see, I tape a lot of those things on TV and listen to them over again.
Uh-huh.
And the second time, it's much more interesting.
You're
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And actually, they get more interesting things than I do.
Well,
I'm not as good as they are.
Your tape, you have such a nice set over there for it. We've been using, Ernest gave me a little tape recorder for Christmas that I'm enjoying a lot.
The cassette?
Yeah, Mary
well,
Margaret.
That's the handiest one.
Mary Margaret and Aaron, Tolkien and Charles, they out in California and they don't get home
yeah,
but once a
yeah.
year. So we don't get to see our grandchild. And she's been talking now. And it's so good to get her on the tape. It just sounds so natural.
They sent us a tape recording of their Christmas morning, opening packages and talking about
just
them.
Turned the tape
yeah.
on while
it.
They were going to do
yeah.
Christmas and forgot
and
about
just
it.
Just like having a visit with them.
It
yeah.
really was.
Oh,
I
yeah.
want to get a tape while Clara and Amy are here.
Oh,
that's
nice.
I'm
having ice cream and muffins.
Chattering all over the place.
This
doesn't that look
very
delicious?
Lovely.
That's
well,
tape, my
know.
Goodness alive.
I know.
Is that
yeah.
one of those sour cream pans?
Well, have a little cake, please.
No, she can't have any.
Okay.
No,
she can't
have
cake. Well,
this,
I didn't think
this
cake would
have any. Well, it's got too much stuff in it for her.
It's
made with water cake.
You know, Mamma was here. It's been a long time ago. And somehow or other, they were putting her off on this the skim milk.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, hell, if she drinks skim milk, I'll drink it too. I don't
mm-hmm.
care what I drink, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Except one skim milk, it was powdered milk. And
could you get used to that?
Oh, I got to. I just soon have that as any.
Oh, I can drink the low fat, but I haven't got to the place I can drink the powdered yet.
Oh, if anything, it's better.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, I got used to that in World War II. And what I found out was, in World War II, a good cook could make powdered eggs taste better than real ones.
Really?
It depended on who did the work.
Well, what, did you add something to the powdered milk that makes it better?
I did. But they'd serve them up in those big steam counters, just
mm-hmm.
like cafeteria, you see.
Yeah.
So it wasn't any individual attention or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But he put his mind to it, for one thing. I think a lot of them just, they get good food and waste it and
mm-hmm.
ruin it, you see.
Oh, well, that can happen. It happened in my my kitchen if I have to watch out.
Well, I haven't got to where I like. I drink thousands too much, but I drink low fat.
Mm-hmm. We keep that kind. We keep the low fat on here. But I haven't got a place I care for the powder.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
And that's why we're talking. Now, you and Roscoe get together, and I have a feeling that y'all tell these stories, and that he's waiting to tell his, and not much interested in the one you're finishing up.
You reckon it works both ways?
There may be something to that.
Or the other way around, whichever way you want to put it. That is your, but both of you just.
And Catherine will just prime Ernest. We get together, and she starts priming him. And I know when she does, he's going to come out with some stories that they've already heard.
She is a most amazing person for her memory.
She really is.
Now, she'll remind me of stories that I told them years ago that I haven't thought about since.
Yeah.
And that I no longer remember in clear detail.
Well, Catherine, and she remembers things about me that have just been something that, by the way, with me, that, you know, that I have forgotten entirely.
Well, so tell.
You mean such stories as?
Yeah.
I don't remember any illustration right now, but she...
We've talked about this. It's just really surprising.
Amazes me. I'll sometimes have to say to her, now, Catherine, you'd have to tell me a little bit of it you remember and see if I can recall the rest of it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
She has a tremendous memory.
But she don't tell stories.
No, she herself. No.
But
she's a good listener. And she's so interested. You know, a person as old as Catherine must be, I don't know what her age is, but as old as she must be, often has come to the place that they are not as involved with everybody and everything as they are.
Uh-huh.
The park as both are, you know.
I know it.
Roscoe is so hard of hearing now, it's a little hard to exchange stories with him.
Yes, he is.
He has great difficulty following.
Well, just let him do the work.
You'll be interested in this. Since I retired, I've gone back to reviewing my Latin and reading medieval Latin. I have now read through all the prose selections in Beeson's Latin Primer. Medieval Latin Primer. That I mean by that I have now about 525 longhand pages of my translation of these selections. And I've got over to the poetry area of it. I'm going to read that next. Then there are a couple more books in medieval Latin I'm going to read. Just because I was an undergraduate Latin major and I like Latin, and I just enjoy doing this.
You've never worked in medieval Latin before, have you?
No, not
Latin
medieval Latin. A little bit around the edges. But I'm going to do some studies when I get all this through with. Came across an interesting thing. I'd better tell you about this.
Wish you would.
This was about 10 years ago. What is our linguist's name? Tom
Powell.
I came across in this little primer an expression, two Latin words side by side, willem nullum. That's willy-nilly in Latin.
Oh.
And I said, Tom, okay, what about this? He said, doesn't really mean anything. He said, willy-nilly comes from Old English, will ye, nill ye. I said, yeah, I know, but here's something that's earlier, in Latin. Well, he just dismissed it. Now, having read through these prose selections, I have not only that illustration, but three additional ones.
Yeah.
This expression. one of them from about the 12th century, one of them from the 14th century, one of them from the 13th, two from the 13th, something like this. And my belief is that our willy-nilly probably goes back ultimately to the Latin. Woolum nolum.
Well, let me tell you, honey, while you're doing that on the side, I wish you would dip back into the 1920s and 30s and pick up some of that language that you know that's in your head.
You mean the...
What kind of language are you thinking about?
Well, about Zane's Brahma Bull and about what your barber talked and what...
Well, let me tell you something that is interesting to me.
Plugged in the current,
This, I think, is a very interesting thing. When I was in Mississippi, I did a lot of collecting for the American Dialect Society. I had about 6,000 cards on which were dialectal proverbial sayings.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
And one day, Harry Harrison...
Well, during your hide, you studied this.
Yes.
I thought it just come to you.
No. Let me tell you a little something about... let me tell you about how... I started out cold on this thing, not knowing how to go about collecting. It didn't take me long to find out how.
You just deceived us all this time, Ernie. You just discouraged me. Here you are, you just hold forth on it, and I'm spellbound. I can't even open my mouth. And I think, why don't I get some of this stuff?
No, let me tell you. I started out this way. I would go to one of these fellows in this little Mississippi town, and I'd say, look, I'm doing what I think is a very interesting thing. I'm collecting sayings. You know any sayings? And he would say, no, I don't believe I do. This just froze the soldiers right there. What I finally got to doing with great effectiveness was I would go to a fellow and say, got something I want to show you. And I would go through about 50 or 60 of these expression sayings, and he'd stop me all along. Have you heard this one?
Oh.
And presently, you must have heard this one too.
Oh, yeah. You primed it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It just goes beautifully that way.
Okay. Yeah.
For example, I was in the home of a fellow there. What was it?
Pearl Henry.
Pearl Henry. That was a man, Pearl. His name Pearl. Pearl Henry. I was in his home. He invited me to come around his home one night, and here there's a big log fire, family all sitting around. It's a rather underprivileged family group, but you get some of your best stuff there, you know. So I was talking to them, and I started reading these, and I came across the expression, ugly as a mud fence, and he stopped me. He said, is that all you've got? And I said, well, isn't that it? He said, that's not all of it. I said, what's the rest of it? He said, the whole thing is as ugly as a mud fence daubed with tadpoles. I said, no, I never heard that. So I put that in, you know.
And he's having it.
Yeah, sure. One day... You remember Harry Harrison Crowell from Martin, Tennessee?
Yes.
He was through that area, and he saw my collection, and he said, say, boy, he began to rub his hand over his head. He said, you know, I'm writing a book right now in which I have some characters who need to say some proverbial things. And he said, I wonder if I could borrow this for a while. And I said, take it along. Sure. But I said, I want it back, and I appreciate you take care of it. He said, I'll take the best care of it, and I'll be sure you get it back. So he took it and had it 3 or 4 months, you know, maybe longer. And finally he returned it to me, and everything was just fine. I never thought about it anymore until I'd moved to Florida. This was about 3 or 4 years later. I was sitting up in the humanities reading room one day of our library, and I got up and looked along the periodicals. I found the Proceedings of the Tennessee Folklore Society. I picked it up and started leafing through it, and I came across a very interesting item. It was this. Harry Harrison Kroll's use of folklore materials, use of proverbial materials.
Nobody knows.
And so, this fellow, whoever it was, this graduate student or somebody, had worked through this book that Kroll wrote and had picked out all these things that Kroll had gotten me and put into them. So here we have research has come full circle. You see, I collected it from the folk, and Kroll got it from me and put it in a book, and this scholar comes along, takes it back out of the book, and puts it in an article.
Give Kroll credit for it.
Yeah. Well, I thought this was very interesting.
You gave away that collection, didn't you?
I gave that to a man at Mississippi State College as I was leaving. I said, now, I won't be able to be over here and collect these anymore. You might like to do this. David Savage at Mississippi State. He's been dead now for years. He died a couple of years after we left, I guess, over there. He said, I've got a problem. I said, what is it? He said, many of the things I know and that are indigenous to my part of Webster County, Mississippi, my part of Mississippi, he said, could not appear in print. I said, what? He said, they surely want an expurgated list. And I said, no, what they want is really the whole thing. Where you find it? Why, he said, my secretaries. I couldn't have them working with this. They would think I was the most depraved human being who ever lived.
Really?
Yeah.
You really had got out of books.
That's before the present generation came up, you know.
Yeah.
They wouldn't think so now. They hear these things on TV and see them at the movies.
It
wouldn't make any difference now, but it did then. Anyway, we're running short. I did enjoy that. That was an interesting project.
But let me tell you, there's a fellow that uses the language straight down here, Buddy Swelding.
What's his name?
Buddy Smith or somebody.
Where is he, in southern part of Gainesville?
You know, South Main Street?
Yeah.
Little sign there says Buddy Swelding.
I may have been
well,
in there.
It's an old shackle thing. He's putting up a new place, though. And he don't well much, now he raises hogs.
Mm-hmm.
And he feeds sanitary slop to him from the restaurants and all.
Mm-hmm.
And I know his brother very well. He was in the back end of the gas well for a number of years.
Smitty.
Not Smitty, the other boy. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, Buddy uses the language in its original flavor.
Does he?
Yeah. And I have been trying my darnest to get down there, you see. can't do it. I have noticed a great weakening of the language since Mark Twain, even since I came out here.
Uh-huh.
Some of the people I knew pretty well through the cows when I came out here, I mean, they run their fingers through the hair and just let you have the thing straight. And I just don't know what is making them so genteel. It's depressing sometimes to think.
Well, you know, it is when everybody starts talking alike, ain't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot to it.
And
yeah.
They don't remember that they used to cut. I don't mean vulgarity like that, but I mean good, strong, expressive language.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we enjoyed your visit.
Well, I tell you, I haven't heard about that. We'll have to hear about that hat guy.
That what?
That hat that you want to tell us about. How you got your hat?
My helmet?
Helmet.
There was a little story about that. He appreciated the appearance of it, you know.
Yeah.
He liked the appearance of it, but it's been through a rough time. I went out with Walter to this Santa Fe place.
You don't want to be apologetic about that.
I went out.
This is the most comfortable one I've had.
Look at that.
It wasn't supposed to be like this. See, that came apart later.
Yeah.
But what happened was it blew off on the tractor, and the tractor run over it.
Yeah.
And it just flattened it out. Well, Nicky was with me, and he picked it up and, you know, put his hand through it and towed it to me, and I put it on, and it's the most comfortable thing I've ever worn out here.
So you recommend having them run over by a tractor.
Well, that's a little extension of the statement.
I was down there out at Walters and decided to go out on the pier and throw in a line and see if I could catch a fish. Didn't have any luck, but while I was throwing the line out, the wind blew my hat off right over into the water, you know. And I just watched it going off down like that. And Walter looked at it and he had an idea. He said, it's going to come pretty close to my neighbor's pier. I'll just run around there and get it as it comes by. So he went around there, and he took my walking stick with him, and he reached out and snagged it as it came near the neighbor's pier, and it was just dripping with water. It was just almost limp with water, you know. And I thought it'd never be any count anymore.
Well,
so I put it in the air conditioning breeze. You know, ventilated it pretty well. And it's all right now.
Hey, you remember about it.
Yeah, it's all right. So it's been through that.
I thought you said you found a fish
in
it.
No.
It looked like a Sunday one to me.
Annabelle won't accept it for that.
I won't accept it for every day if I can help it.
Well, I'll tell you, you go down and get your back straight. We'll get Ross. He's going to go in and have an examination on the back.
I'd like to
hear
a little bit more about medieval studies. And I also would like to hear a little bit about the 20th and 30th, somewhere along there.
Well, I'm not an authority on anything, really. But these are interests of mine.
Yeah.
Hey, this was delightful.
We just enjoyed it so much. I tell you, this is just a thrill.
I'm sorry you have lost your friend. I'm also sorry that the funeral is at this time.
It is a little early.
Stay the day
in the afternoon, but this is Dr. DeBusk, and he used to be head of the citrus here years ago. Before, I guess he's been retired. He was 90.
He was retired about the time we came.
91.
You know Lou Neeland?
I know who he is.
Well,
and
he retired here.
He's just a serious old man. We have, and his wife is so good. We just have known him through the years since he's been here, so we must
run along.
Guy, I'll remember that trip a long time. I get hungry for the country. Ann Lil and I talk about it. In the springtime, we grew up in the country, and then in the springtime, we get that yam, you know. Well,
yeah.
You know where it is, as I tell you all the time.
We sure have enjoyed it. Now, you all come our way.
Well, I just think about it, all these nice stories. That you all brought from Mississippi.
Thank you. Just come by the house, bring Perry and come out there, and I'll show you some of the stuff I've collected.
All right.
You do that, and we have some birds too, believe it or not.
Well, I'm telling you.
Channel one over around 1600. The end of the visit with Ernest and Annabelle Cox is Saturday the 30th of March 74. Channel one over around 1600. The end of the visit with Ernest and Annabelle Cox is Saturday lunch the 30th of March 74. Channel one over 1600. The end of the visit with Ernest and Annabelle Cox is Saturday the at lunch, the 30th of March, 74. I never saw that.
No, the older side I saw.
She's hardy.
When they were cautious.
Yeah, it was.
She's so glad Ernest has retired.